My view is that each of us has a solemn responsibility to defend the Constitution and to speak the truth. I hope those officers who go to Capitol Hill will speak truthfully, that they'll speak completely.
As impeachment proceedings move ahead in Congress, the Trump administration's strategy of stonewalling House Democrats is running into a problem of its own making: low morale within the halls of the State Department. Across Washington, D.C., civil servants are meeting in secret, downloading encrypted apps to communicate with each other, and even ducking into bathrooms in order to speak openly. Many of them echoing the same concerns of ousted former ambassador to Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch, who told Congress earlier this month that, quote, "Today we see the State Department attacked and hollowed out from within." Other high-ranking members of the diplomatic corps have come forward with their own concerns. On Sunday, George Stephanopoulos spoke to Secretary of State Mike Pompeo on ABC and asked him about a recent op-ed written by Bill Burns, a veteran diplomat and former Deputy Secretary of State who worked under both Republican and Democratic administrations.
Here's how he described what you allowed with Ambassador Yovanovitch. Secretary Pompeo allowed specious opposition research about Yovanovitch to circulate around the department and sat on his hands as Trump slandered Yovanovitch on the infamous call with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and warned ominously that she's going to, quote, go through some things. And your response?
That's crazy. I think Bill Burns must be auditioning to be Elizabeth Warren's Secretary of State.
On Friday, the State Department weighed in on the ongoing crisis in northern Syria. In a memo sent to American embassies around the world, President Trump's decision to abandon the U.S. Kurdish allies was described as, quote, severely undermining counter-ISIS efforts, endangering innocent civilians, and threatening peace, security, and stability in the region. A far different message than the rosy picture described just a day before at a rally in Dallas.
And we went there, and we said, we want to pause. And the Kurds have been terrific. They're going to move back a little bit. We're going to keep ISIS all nice and locked up.
These breakdowns in communication and confusion over messaging highlight what many diplomats have warned would be the consequences of a State Department hollowed out under Donald Trump. And the institutional decay could outlast his presidency, hurting America's ability to conduct foreign policy for decades. I'm Tanzina Vega, and you're listening to The Takeaway. For more, I'm joined by former Ambassador Reuben E. Brigady. He's dean at the Elliott School of International Affairs at George Washington University and former U.S. representative to the African Union. Ambassador Brigady, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start with what effect all of this that we just described is having on civil servants, particularly if they're being labeled by members of the Trump administration as partisan. And I want to go back there to Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's comments that Bill Burns, for example, is, quote, auditioning to be Elizabeth Warren's Secretary of State.
Well, gosh, there's so much to say there. I mean, first of all, Ambassador William Burns is one of America's greatest ambassadors and is a true national asset. I had the pleasure of working with him when I was at the State Department. I hosted him at the African Union headquarters in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, and he is a true professional and true gentleman. So Secretary Pompeo's slander is really most unfortunate. Now, let me also say that when we're talking about morale within the State Department, we're not simply talking about, you know, the bruised feelings of cosseted diplomats. What we're really talking about is whether or not our nation's professional diplomatic service feels as if they are rendering service to superiors who also share their commitment to the Constitution and share a commitment to America's interests. And I think it's fair to say that if you were a foreign adversary, you could not do more damage to America's diplomatic capability than what has been done in the last couple of years, starting with the very capricious cuts, some 30%, both in budget and personnel, that were sought to be enacted by Secretary Pompeo's predecessor, former Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. But also, quite frankly, you really cannot underestimate the chilling effect that the way in which Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch, former ambassador to the Ukraine, the way in which she was treated by the president and how she was not defended by the Secretary of State, what a chilling effect that has had to America's diplomats that are serving all over the world, who quite frankly feel that they are not working for an administration that will support them when they are doing very difficult things on behalf of the national interest all around the world.
Ambassador Brigati, given everything that you just outlined, would you say that the State Department is in crisis?
I'd say it's very close to it. You know, my office as dean of the Elliott School is literally across the street from the State Department. And my personal office has become something of a speakeasy for State Department personnel, both very junior, in some cases very senior, who will come over, have a cup of coffee, close the door. Broadly speaking, amongst our most senior diplomats, which you often find, are people that have rendered, you know, decades of service, that have unbelievable expertise in very challenging parts of the world, and in many cases are making the decision that they cannot continue to work for such capricious leadership, and then decide to leave precipitously, depriving our country of their great expertise, which you find amongst very junior Foreign Service officers, incredibly gifted young people that could be doing anything with their lives, could be paid much more if they work for the private sector, but decided they wanted to serve their country, who look at this and say, my gosh, maybe I made a mistake, maybe this is not what I want to do, and to choose to leave earlier for what they believe to be greener pastures. And in the middle, what you find are a lot of mid-grade officers, 10, 12, 15 years of service, who look ahead of them and see how poorly their seniors are treated, look behind them and see so many younger people moving on, and have to evaluate from themselves whether or not it's worth essentially leaving now in the sort of the middle of their careers, or finding ways to just make do or go to other parts of the department where they may be less visible and therefore less prone to invoke the ire of an increasing politicized leadership.
Ambassador, you mentioned junior Foreign Service officers here who may be watching this and being dissuaded by what's happening. But I want to talk a little bit also about the effect that all of this has on foreign policy and the importance here, particularly in these roles, the diplomacy roles, of experience. I think there are probably folks who have very romanticized views of what diplomats do. But can you talk about the role of actual tangible experience and how important that is for State Department, particularly senior State Department employees?
Absolutely. I mean, so first of all, when most Americans see diplomacy or foreign policy, what they most in cases are seeing are, you know, the big major summits when the president goes somewhere, or big treaties, or maybe big negotiations as it relates to armed conflict or other sorts of things. And those clearly, obviously, are very, very important. And our professional diplomatic corps brings an awful lot of expertise to that. But what the vast majority of what they are doing are things that most of the American public will never see. Most don't know about, and nevertheless are very important to our interests. So whether that is understanding the nature of political dynamics in Azerbaijan or in Jordan, or trying to understand the nature of tribal relationships in the Mandera Triangle in between Kenya, Tanzania, and Ethiopia, or whether that is trying to understand the dynamics between rival gangs in El Salvador or Honduras, and how the respective governments are dealing with this, and having not only historical background but the language capabilities and the relationships to be able to try to convince foreign interlocutors to take actions which are not only in their interest, but also in our interests as well. You know, the essence of diplomacy is to get someone else to do something that you want them to do because they want to do it. And the vast majority of American power comes down to that, not to the aircraft carriers or to the submarines or infantry battalions that our valiant military serves, but to that level of negotiation and persuasion and understanding of local knowledge that simply does not happen overnight, that you can't just pull down off the internet, and that you can't deploy without years of both expertise and trust building on the ground. And that's what America's professional diplomatic corps, what our professional Foreign Service does for the American people every day all around the world. We are making judgments, calculations about what is in our national interest vis-a-vis the other side, and then trying to extract concessions from the other side based on what is in the national interest. We never, ever make those calculations on the basis of what is in the personal political interest of the President of the United States or anybody else. And that is what happened with regard to the withhold of vitally needed arms to the Ukraine, which is engaged in a hot war with Russia, in exchange for an investigation to try to find political dirt on the president's most feared political rival for his reelection.
Ambassador, we've talked on this show in particular about how President Trump's sort of erratic approach in many ways to foreign policy has weakened in some ways the United States' standing on the world stage. Do you see what's happening at the State Department as having a similar effect, particularly with all of what you just laid out, with people who have this level of expertise? And how our foreign allies and or non-allies might be viewing us? Are we seen as weaker with all of this happening?
There's no question that we are, because when American diplomats, whether our ambassadors or our junior officers at post or our more senior assistant secretaries or even the Secretary of State himself, when they speak to foreign interlocutors, those interlocutors have to know that they're speaking for the policy of the United States and in some cases directly for the President of the United States. And the way in which President Trump has decided to conduct himself means that the whole world knows that nobody speaks for American policy or for the president, other than the president himself, and sometimes just by tweet. And as we've seen with the abandonment, the shameless abandonment of our allies, the Kurds in northern Syria, as a result of a phone call between President Erdogan and Turkey and President Trump, this has disastrous consequences. I mean, not only will the abandonment go down as the greatest betrayal of a battlefield ally in American history, every other country, every other armed group, every other intelligence asset, everybody else around the world with whom the United States has vital partnerships is looking at that incident and wondering whether or not the United States will be able to keep its word, whether or not we are worthy to be trusted. And that will have implications for whether or not partners decide to back us in wars. It will have implications for whether or not partners decide to share vitally important secret information with us, sometimes at great peril with themselves. It will have dramatically bad consequences for whether or not countries decide that if they sign a treaty with us, that we will honor it in good faith. Which is not to say that there aren't serious policy questions around all these things, about whether and what our disposition ought to be in the Middle East, how we ought to fight ISIS, what the distribution and deployment of our military forces around the world ought to be. Of course there are, but you don't make those kinds of major decisions on a whim by a phone call or by tweet without consultation, without understanding. Because when you do, you place a dagger through the essential element of diplomacy, which is trust. And as one of my mentors once told me, you cannot surge trust. You have to build it before you need it. And if you are cavalier with it and you destroy it so quickly, it can be years, if ever, before it is built up again.
Ambassador Reuben E. Brigady, Dean at the Elliott School of International Affairs at George Washington University and former U.S. Representative to the African Union, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Joining me now is Nihal Tusi, a foreign affairs reporter for Politico. Thanks for being with us, Nihal.
Thanks for having me.
So since Donald Trump took office, we've heard about many things, including the quote-unquote deep state that he believes is against him. What effect has that had, Nihal, on how intelligence agencies have been treated during his administration?
Well, he seems to very much not trust the intelligence agencies, as well as the State Department and other pieces of the executive branch, because he just isn't sure that they are loyal to him. You have intelligence agencies, diplomats, and others who feel like they have targets on their back. They're just trying to do their job. They have an oath that they take that means that they're supposed to act in a nonpartisan way and offer the best advice that they can to the president. But when they offer him an analysis or advice that basically goes against what he wants to believe, even if it's true, that just basically means he becomes more suspicious of them to begin with.
We're seeing, as you know, and as many Americans are watching, lots of folks from within the State Department and diplomats making decisions to testify before Congress in spite of White House opposition. What are people inside the State Department thinking about that?
Well, they feel pretty good about the fact that you have these diplomats who are defying orders from the White House, defying orders from the Secretary of State, and going to Congress and testifying and telling members of Congress how they feel about the way that diplomats have been treated over the past 3 years and what the concerns that they have about how this is going to affect U.S. foreign policy going forward. There's a lot of folks in the State Department who, for the past 3 years, have really felt marginalized and frustrated. And, you know, they just feel like this is a moment of Well, I use the word revenge in my story, but I got some blowback from them. So, you know, they feel it's a moment of justice. Let's put it that way.
And these are concerns. I mean, obviously, especially when we're talking about senior State Department officials and people who've worked under multiple administrations, these are bipartisan concerns. They're not political in nature, are they?
Well, look, when you have civil service officers and foreign service officers who work in the government, they serve under whoever is president, Republican or Democrat. Some serve for decades. And the whole idea is they are nonpartisan and they're there to offer continuity and expertise to whoever takes charge of the White House. But these people have been accused of being Obama holdovers by Trump political appointees, even if they have been in government long before President Barack Obama took office. And so they've been tagged in this way. And it's like the Trump aides and President Trump himself feels like they're disloyal simply because they were there before Trump won the presidency. But the idea that you can, you know, replace hundreds of thousands, millions of government workers just when you take office, it's not realistic, right? So you need a civil and foreign service that's there that offers the backbone of what government does that keeps things functioning and continuing, even, you know, between presidents.
Well, and to that end, I mean, we saw the former and ousted ambassador to Ukraine, Yovanovitch, had served for decades in her role and with the State Department. So the Trump administration has been pretty open about pushing back against whistleblowers and any kind of dissent. Is silencing civil servants, is this silencing them, or are they finding ways to express themselves? We heard from our previous guests that there's sort of an informal, you know, channel of conversation happening in Foggy Bottom over there. But are you seeing other things?
Well, sure. I mean, they talk amongst themselves. They go on, you know, special encrypted apps at the National Security Council, you know, especially in the early days of Trump. I mean, they definitely found ways to huddle. But basically, it was because they were extremely worried about some of the things that the Trump administration wanted to do because, A, they feel like it was probably illegal. And there were just all sorts of concerns. But you have to remember, look, if there was seriously a deep state in this country, and I used to work in Pakistan, where, you know, I think there arguably is a deep state, it would be a lot more powerful, you know, but they have not really been able to do anything to change this administration in a way that's tangible. So some of them, when you mention the idea of a deep state, they laugh at you. They're like, what are you talking about? We are not that potent. And we're just trying to make sure that whatever policy this administration puts in place, that it's legal, that it's workable, that it's logistically capable of being put into place to begin with.
You know, we talked a little bit about State Department watching as diplomats are testifying before Congress. What are the risks of testifying there? What are the risks that they face for opposing the White House in that way?
Well, they raise the risk of Trump having even more disdain and distrust of the State Department. Even if the president is impeached, he is unlikely to be removed from office, and there's still a strong chance that he'll get reelected. So you already have a State Department that has tensions with the White House, and now that they're testifying against the president in a way, it's just going to risk his wrath further. And then that leads to another risk, which is this whole idea that already people around the world are confused about who speaks for U.S. foreign policy, what U.S. foreign policy actually is, because it's so chaotic and confused and divergent at certain points. And this is going to add to that. If a U.S. diplomat is out there on the front lines talking to his counterpart from another country, they're going to ask this person, look, how do I know that you're really speaking for the president?
And when we think about leadership over at the State Department, our previous guest mentioned Rex Tillerson and Mike Pompeo. When he came in, he was seen as a welcome change from Tillerson. He was supposed to improve morale. That seems to have changed. And I'm wondering if you can give us a sense of when that happened.
Well, a couple of things. First of all, in August, the Inspector General of the State Department put out a report that talked about the very bad way in which a lot of career employees had been treated in the International Organizations Bureau of the State Department. And Pompeo did nothing to remove, he did not fire the head of that bureau, who's a political appointee. And Pompeo's aides said that he couldn't because the man was a Senate-confirmed appointee. But that meant that people in this bureau who had been abused, and this is something the Inspector General confirmed by this leader of this bureau, were livid because they were like, wait a minute, like, you're not going to do anything to fire him? You're not going to get rid of him? So that was one thing. And then you have the Yovanovitch case where, you know, Secretary Pompeo was on that call. Secretary Pompeo was the one who basically said, fine, let's pull Marie Yovanovitch out of Ukraine. And he has never publicly defended her. And that drives people crazy. Like, even if he felt like behind the scenes he was protecting Yovanovitch by getting her out of there, she's still on the State Department payroll. She wasn't fired. Even if he felt like he was helping her, the fact that he will not say anything positive about her in public, it just drives people crazy. And it's clear that he's doing that because he wants to make sure not to make Donald Trump mad at him.
Nahal Tusi is a foreign affairs reporter for Politico. Nahal, thanks so much.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.